Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 18th year. I'm your host, Jess Marquez, and our guests today are Earl Hall and Namish Pirahi, Chairman and Vice Chairman of the International Gaming Standards Association, or IGSA. Let's talk about the biggest problems facing today's industry, the IGSA's role in solving those problems, and the vision for the organization's next 25 years. This podcast is sponsored by Pavilion Payments, which empowers gaming institutions to create an enhanced patron experience with a complete suite of integrated payment solutions that enable safe, secure, and trusted cash access at the cage, on the casino floor, or online. Learn more at pavilionpayments.com. Even though the technology of today's industry is light years ahead of what it was 25 years ago when the IGSA was first founded, the ethos of service and common good still permeates through the organization, and there are no better examples than Earl Hall and Namish Pirahi, current chairman and vice chairman. Both are leaders who live on the cutting edge of the industry, and both are acutely aware of the potential dangers and pitfalls that lie ahead for the industry at large. They spoke to GGB Managing Editor Jess Marquez from their respective Las Vegas offices in August. Namish, Earl, thank you guys so much for joining me today. How are you gentlemen doing today?
Fantastic.
Very good. Thanks so much. How about yourself?
Doing great, thanks. It's bright and sunny here today after a few days of rain, so can't complain. And I got my mom staying here with me this week, so always love that.
That's just too cool.
All right.
So I want to get into this conversation with you guys today, and I'm really excited because I had a really great time talking with Peter and Mark for the first episode, and I'm going to reference that conversation a lot. I'm going to try not to because obviously you guys don't know what I'm talking about, but I just took so many great points from it that I didn't know before, and it gave me a really great foundation to talk to you guys now, especially with you guys being at the helm of IGSA as chairman and vice chairman. And I kind of want to start, and I'm not going to talk for too long. Trust me, I'll let you guys talk. But I kind of want to start with this idea of service, in the sense that, you know, in a business environment, it's easy, I guess, for a person to go about their entire career and be very successful and enjoy, you know, very many things about their industry and not have a sense of service or a sense of need to give back, in a sense, which, you know, as I said, a lot of people go through their entire careers like that. And I don't begrudge anyone like that. But it takes a certain type of person to want to give sacrifice and take time and effort to give back to the industry overall so that everyone may benefit. Even obviously close competitors, which, you know, most of the people within the IGSA obviously work for private companies who are in direct competition with each other. But when you can come together for the good of the whole, as it were, I think you can really see some great teamwork and some great results out of that. And I think IGSA is a great representation of that. So beginning with that foundation, and this is, these are open to both of you guys, obviously, but, you know, with you guys being at the helm as chairman and vice chairman, what made you guys decide to get involved with the organization in the first place? And I guess more broadly, kind of what sparked that sense of service and help?
Well, I think for me, I have to give the shout out to the person who really deserves all the credit, and that's my mom. She taught me from a very young age that one, be involved, two, always serve, and three, always give back more than you get. So I was programmed like that from a very early age. So for me, it's not even been a thought my entire life. It's how do I get involved? How do I get it done? How can I do the impossible? And when it comes to IGSA, it's very simple. I joined at a moment where the industry was heading into an inflection point. It's in a moment where the general industry was going cloud, the general industry was going big data, the general industry was already cashless. And we all knew that we just needed a spark for artificial intelligence to go business to consumer. So with the expertise that my team has cultivated over the last 12 years, I thought we had the expertise. And of course, I love volunteering. So it just became the right mix about 4 years ago for Access to jump in, get involved, and do whatever we can.
Yeah, I'll jump in here. So, you know, just like both of you, mom gets a lot of credit on my side too. But ultimately, like, you know, I think just from a service side, people are, people don't understand, like, you know, in terms of like service is really what you talked about there, Jess, that, It's something that you have to put in, and Earl put it eloquently enough that there, it is a voluntary nature. My side, my track was a little different, right? So I've been born and raised in this industry. I now often tell people it's the only industry I've known, right? So I actually was born as a regulator here in terms of New Jersey Division of Gaming Enforcement, Gaming Control Board in Pennsylvania, and then also at the National Indian Gaming Commission. So there is that ingrained sense of service in terms of you make sure that from a regulatory and a fairness perspective that you are always there to look out for the perception of the industry, but also more importantly, the people that are around it as well. And, you know, there was an opportunity last year from, and been involved here for about 5 years, but last year there was an opportunity where Peter and Earl had also approached me. And I said, yeah, I'd be honored to be a vice chairman and, you know, work with a visionary like Earl. So that was a great opportunity. If you ever, you'll get a sense of it as we go through this podcast as well. And, you know, in general, like it's really accurate what the chairman here said. We are at an inflection point, and I look at it as we are in our industry 5.0 moment, where industry 4.0 was the data revolution that everyone else has been living through or has lived through. So it's an important time, but more importantly, it's going to be a fun time here. And that's what we're really looking forward to.
Well, that's great. And, you know, as somebody like myself, and I have to say this honestly, who is just getting into the industry, you know, I grew up in Nevada, was around it my whole life, but obviously now just getting into it directly. I have a lot of appreciation for people like yourself and for Peter and the rest of the people at the organization, because when faced with adversity and or problems, it takes a lot of brain power to, especially from a comprehensive nature, to find problems that can work for, or find solutions rather, that can work with everybody. And one of the aspects of the conversation in the first episode that I found so intriguing was hearing the history of how these things came about. And also, I mean, we're talking about timelines, you know, before I was even born, just to put it in, you know, perspective for myself. But it was so great for me to hear about the problems that were facing the industry at that time and why the need to create the association then. So if we fast forward to today, obviously we're in a completely different universe, different dimension almost from that time, it feels like, probably for you guys who have lived it. What, in your opinion, from an IGSA perspective, if you're wearing that hat, and I'll start with you, Nimish, obviously from a regulatory perspective, but what, in your guys' opinion, are the biggest challenges facing the industry of today and obviously tomorrow, considering, you know, you have to be forward thinking? So what, if we look at 2023, what would you say are the biggest challenges facing the industry right now?
No, it's something that Earl, you know, hit upon earlier, is the evolution of the technology itself, right? So when you look at, you know, going and putting on my past regulator hat, one of the fun challenges, I keep going back to fun because that's really the, you know, the gold standard is to seek that out. But from a regulatory standpoint, I've been honored and privileged enough that in certain of the jurisdictions that I've worked in, we've created technical standards and technical regulations in general. And a lot of those times when I was putting my, you know, that hat on and hearkening back to those days, the challenges and difficulties were around anytime you're trying to regulate a new technology, because ultimately regulators are also partners in terms of making sure that they don't prevent any new technologies from entering, but they have to make sure they safeguard the interests of the people. So a lot of time was spent in understanding the technology, understanding the risks associated with the technology, doing, you know, going and talking to the industry to understand what's really going on. And back then, you know, as I put my empathy hat on too, there were maybe one or two new technical innovations that were coming out. And as I, you know, look at it from that angle as well, and also, you know, the people that I work with in the industry, the pace of innovation has recently picked up as well. And if you look outside and you look what's going on, there is that factor, like, you know, the regulators are kind of, and it's a terrible analogy right now, but they're fighting fires on multiple fronts right now. You know, you've got AI, you've got cashless, like Earl talked about. But then there's also things where generative AI is coming in, permeating through life, to people as well. There's things with data integrity in terms of what's going on with data privacy across in the European Union. So if you look at it from a global standard and global framework, there's so much information being thrown at the industry, inclusive of the regulators as well. So I see that as one of the bigger challenges right now, is the pace of innovation and how do you have the regulations that keep up with it.
Oh, sorry about that. So if we look at, and and Earl, I'll pose this one to you. So in the sense that IGSA is not a direct regulatory agency, obviously you guys are not levying fines and you're not doing that sort of thing. So in sort of,
I'm glad you equated the gaming industry regulators to equating fines.
Well,
I think I'm going to take a swing at that one.
Well, I will. Well, so that was
ask,
the first
ask
thing.
Your question. Ask your question, and that's going to be my add-on.
Well, I can't wait to hear, but I would just say that was the first thing that came to mind in terms of jurisdiction and authority, right? Because putting money where your mouth is usually the truest sign of authority. But so what is IGSA's role in helping to overcome figure out the solution to these challenges? What is IGSA's role in that dilemma?
So first of all, I think we need to lay a foundation to make sure that the answer has some kind of credibility.
Sure.
Our industry from the 1990s all the way up to the market crash in 2008, all the way up to COVID, we've tried server-based gaming, and now I'm pointing towards land-based because I have a very different opinion of sports betting online and land-based. But I need to point my finger directly at the land base to start. Up until COVID, we largely had no innovation in the land base industry. Systems are still on premise. Slot machines are largely still flashed up locally. There is some innovation, but it's low. We have highly protected environments, highly regulated environments, highly patent-driven environments, which means innovation is very slow. COVID comes along and the entire planet changed overnight, and three things evolved through COVID that are now the foundation of the general world we live in. Number one, every single thing is in real time. We expect everything to be in real time. We expect everything to be connected. And here's the most important one. We expect instant gratification for every single thing we do, if that makes sense. So because we want everything to be connected, we don't want to struggle to do things and sign up for things. We don't want clunky seven-step KYC processes to use a mobile app. Because of the fact that everybody's holding a smartphone at a slot machine now, because of the fact that if I do something online, I get a reward right away, the entire rules of the gaming industry have changed instantly. Now, that being said, our regulators do an incredible job. Let's not talk about the fines. Our regulators do an incredible job, just as the justice departments do, of creating a slow, constant pace of evolution, if that makes sense, so that there are no mistakes made by making a quantum leap in the wrong direction. And that we have our regulators to thank for that. But that being said, we lived a seismic shift in our society rules globally during COVID. Now, IGSA has stood up since Nimish showed up, because I wouldn't have taken the job if Nimish didn't have to take it. That was a given for me. This was a two-person package, or I was not doing it. And you want to see partnership, Nimish and I've never had this much fun in the association ever. Working with a former regulator for me is just like an educational experience every single call. And what we've really seen, and I love the fact that Peter and Mark have been around so long, they're carrying the organizational memory of how we've evolved. But it goes without saying that when Nimish and I showed up with Martin and all the rest of the board members, this year we decided to take the quantum leap. And when I mean quantum leap, payment standards committee right out of the gate, responsible gaming committee, ethical AI committee, and more coming. Why? Because the worst job in this industry right now is a regulator. Why? They're the meat in the sandwich between the political level, which wants volatility to get votes, the player society level that needs protection, the speed of technology change, and absolutely nobody to give them a clear, safe direction to pick up speed. So IGSA right now is entering into a moment of its existence that, in my opinion, is the most important since its inception. Because how do regulators deal with AI? I can hide bad stuff inside of second derivative calculus that nobody will ever see, if that makes sense. How is cashless not already adopted? What have we done wrong that cashless is working everywhere except in the gaming land-based industry? So IGSA has entered into a moment in time where I think the regulators need us more than ever before in their history. And it's just, it's inspiring to me because whether it be the most prestigious organization we have worldwide, which is the International Association of Gaming Regulators, whether it be IMGL, whether it be any of those organizations, they have been reaching out at an accelerating pace over the last months to ask IGSA, what are you folks up to? Can we collaborate? Can we talk about this? And I have managed to give a shout out to UNLV. IGSA has not really had the closest relationship with UNLV. And don't forget, UNLV is our high school, it's our primary school, it's our college, it's our university, it's our go-to place for education worldwide in our industry. I'm so proud to see UNLV running towards IGSA to give Nimish and I a hand as we try to sift through education, neutral information and everything. Because what I'm finding, and I don't know, Nimish, I would love for you to give some rebuttal here, but what I'm finding is that the regulators looking at us and going, help us, feed us. We want to go faster. We know the industry needs us. This fine thing, it's noise for me. The real thing is I'm finding regulators scared, lost, 100% engaged, and wanting to find solutions because they want to help the operators remain competitive before some other industry segment steals their player base away, if that makes sense. Nimish?
No, I think that was very well said, right? And going back to what I talked about a little bit earlier, right? Like, how do we make sure there's a foundational element for regulators as well? So I'll use a perfect example here. So the idea and the explanation that if you look at it from a regulatory standpoint, so I put on my previous hat, right? The research part, the outreach part, there's a very finite time that regulators have to come up with the regulation side. So what we're proposing here, and really the value proposition from an industry standards association, is coming up with the research and kind of a one-stop shop for consultation with the regulators as well. And one example of it is, you know, kind of one of the committees that we're running, which is the Ethical AI Committee. So we took a look at, from an association standpoint, and once again, hats off to Earl Reno. This seems like a little bro fest going on here, but that's really, it's been fun too. But when we look at the Ethical AI charter and everything else that we came up with, we looked at what was going on, right? You look at the news, if you look at outside of the U.S., the parliamentary hearings. In the U.S., we've got legislative and Senate hearings as well. And there's no such thing as an AI standard in gaming. So while we're not necessarily coming up with an actual technical standard, which is best still left up to the regulators of the jurisdictions, we're creating like a template, you know, that, hey, whatever you do, here's a baseline to start up with. These are all the things we can think of, or these are like the best practices that exist out there that you can use. And that is a great example of how we're kind of evolving the GSA. Instead of just being a technical organization, it's also a non-technical standards organization as well. That is the primary mission ends up being to create something that regulators can use and pick and choose what they like to fit into their markets and jurisdictions.
Well, that was very well said for you both. And it definitely gives me and I'm sure our listeners as well some more context as to, you know, your guys' role and where you fit in that hierarchy. I do have to say, though, very quickly, and I will not spend very much time on this, but I did tell Brett Abarbanel in London last year that any mention of UNLV on this podcast must be censored by me, a proud University of Nevada graduate. So let's not go too crazy there, but I'm just kidding.
I can't show you my red socks then, right?
Well, all you got to do is just move over and you'll see the big Reno picture in the background, right? And that should speak for itself.
That's right. That's exactly right. The University of Nevada. Anyway, so you guys obviously touched a lot about the digital transformation of gaming, which if anyone has been in and around this industry, is pretty obvious to see and to hear as everyone, you know, is on the minds and conversation of everyone around the industry. And Nimish, I want to start with you because I want to break this kind of into two separate pieces, but I feel like, and as somebody like myself who tries really hard to understand the technology and to listen to the leaders who are such as you guys who are facilitating it, I think sometimes what can get lost or what is kind of mentioned but maybe not so much detailed is the idea that this technology is something that could go either way, right? I feel like that's kind of one of the points of conversation is like, well, if we do this, it could go very bad. And if we don't do this, it could go good. Or like, there's always some kind of good and bad variation in terms of how the technology could unwind. And so Nimish, I'm curious from a gaming perspective, in your opinion, what does, let's say if we go some moment in time, let's say 5 years from now is kind of a good distance, but what would you say would be a good example of how the technology was adopted and implemented? And what would you say would be a bad example? Or in other words, let's say if we look back years from now, what would be like the bad, you know, the if we look at our crystal ball, what would be the bad example and what would be the good example to you?
So I'll kind of answer that twofold, right? So I'll put on the historical hat. So, you know, so from the company that I do represent on the board as well, from an aristocrat standpoint, there's a lot of good that we've done. We are an omni-channel company as well. So I try to make sure that those values are also being implemented here. And I think I'll start with the good because that's easier sometimes than like, you know, criticizing yourself. So putting on that hat from a company standpoint, we're a people first company, right? So how do I take that and represent that on to what we're trying to do from an industry standpoint on the IGSA, you know? And one of the things that's interesting is we look at the technical innovations, we look at everything else that's happening, the pace of the technical innovations as well. You know, I talked about the industry 5.0 moment, right? And to me, the industry 5.0 moment is you're not necessarily just now zeroed in on what the data and the technical evolution affords you to do. There is this, you know, awakening that we are seeing right now too, is that there is kind of a people first and a people centric approach coming out here as well. And that's my industry 5.0 moment. And what's really cool about, like, you know, going back to the ethical AI committee, we are doing this and we're trying to get it done right in that, yes, we're voluntarily putting up these templates here, but our approach and the charter of the ethical AI committee is such that we want to make sure that AI influenced systems are not negatively impacting or harming people. And people are defined as either players, our customers, or our employees, right? So we've taken that approach, we're sticking to that ethos. And I think that's an example of if things are done right, that is a really huge advantage on how we can get it done. Now, over the years, you know, one of the things I've seen is, and Earl touched upon this a little bit as well, and I'll expound on that. There is a consensus where responsible gaming comes into play here as well, because that's also the harm prevention that we're trying to achieve from ethical AI, right? That should be a beneficiary of it. And a lot of times what happens is, like, if you're not conscious about the pace of innovation or just the innovation itself, where you're not putting in these frameworks in place that people can benefit from, then it can have unintended consequences. And those unintended consequences, there's some examples of that, whether or not it's the pace of innovation that was stifled, you know, involuntarily because we took some time back. An example of that, by the way, is, and I don't know how to put some age on us, right? But CRT monitors. So CRT monitors were the thing, but they died very rapidly.
No idea what you're talking about. Absolutely, yeah. No idea.
Exactly, right? So they're the tube TVs, you know, when you think about video killed the radio star. So, you know, the CRT monitors were an example of innovation that was done right, but it took a while for the touchscreen requirements and things like that to enter the land-based gaming industry. Another one, you know, going back to the whole responsible gaming thing, we know as an industry there needs to be something done, but the standards out there are, you know, really varied at best, and there's no kind of uniform baseline that people can build them, or an analytical approach that I'm sure Earl will touch upon through the podcast as well. So those are some examples, you know, like that I can think of where things that are done right is industry coming together, creating baselines. And the other one is we drag our feet. We know there's a problem, we really can't put our finger on it.
Well, Namish, I must say that you are a great guest because you literally took the interview right out of my hand. I was literally just going to ask Earl as soon as you were done about the responsible gaming side of AI, because I know that that is an extremely big topic of his. So again, Earl, I'd like to give you the floor as to the AI capabilities and technical capabilities that RG could have in store for us.
I'm just trying to filter if I'm going to go G, P, G, or R.
My kids will be watching this, so I would request PG.
Okay, so it's beyond me how we can be in an industry that doesn't want KYC as its legitimacy base. It's beyond me. I have a very analytical brain, so my brain cannot compute it. Why? I'll talk about the exciting part for the operators first, because when the operators and the regulators' interests are aligned, you can't fail. If we were running our industry on a big data model, where we could bring in the best of Snowflake, the best of Salesforce, the best of Cognos, and we could generate avatar models to understand a player's journey, a player's satisfaction, a player's enjoyment, this industry could literally triple its revenue. People would be saying, why would I go to a restaurant on Friday night? I'm having 10 times more fun at the Bellagio. But because of the fact that we're still running in an analog world, we don't have KYC as our basis of legitimacy, transparency, and traceability, we're doing everything the wrong way. And you never know you're digging in the wrong direction until the entire cave falls on your head. But that being said, as you know, responsible gaming is the reason I'm staying in this industry. If not, there's a lot of other things I'd like to do with the rest of my hopefully long life. But that being said, in a KYC-based industry with AI as your jet fuel, first of all, I hate the term responsible gaming. I want to go on record as saying that. And even worse, in England, UK, they call it responsible gambling. How about if we talk about player health instead? I don't talk about responsible eating, responsible drinking. You know, can you imagine a waiter coming up to you at a restaurant going, are you eating responsibly? Oh, no, none of your business. Get out of my face. So the point is we should be talking about player health. And the only way to predict and prevent addiction and to maintain a level, a quantitative metric of 99.7% player health, is to be running predictive algorithms so that when somebody goes out of the median of their normal player behavior, you can do tests on it to see, is it because they're having too much fun? Is it because they're with friends? Is there something going on that's taking them out of a standard deviation? Or is this person, maybe they got a phone call from their mother and their mother's sick or whatever, and all of a sudden they're just slamming money into the machine. That's where the algorithm should be saying, hey, want a coffee and a donut? We're going to reserve your machine for 15 minutes. Scan this QR code and go over and, you know, take a breather. You can wrap that up marketing-wise to make it look really, really cool. But until we're in a big data-driven environment where we can use the power of algorithms to protect people, they're never going to have as much fun as they could, and they'll never be as happy and satisfied as they should, because we're not doing this the right way, if that makes sense.
Definitely. And like I said before, I think it's one of the most under-discussed aspects, probably not of the industry, but just especially with relation to the new technologies coming out as well. I definitely think it's under-discussed. If we zoom out a little bit, and Namish, I'll start with you on this one, but So one of the hallmarks of the first 25 years of the organization was its worldwide growth, right? Obviously the eye, you know, the eye is there for a reason. So can you foresee any new potential growth in the future? Are there any markets, kind of areas that you would like to see better represented perhaps in the future?
So I think the technology is going to drive the growth, but at the same time, like, you know, there's obviously new markets that are coming up as well. One of our core remits, if you look at it from an industry standpoint and also from an association standpoint, is to make sure that we are the voice of reason for any kind of fragmentation of standards that might be out there. And I'll give you a quick example, right? So if you harken back in about, I want to say it was about 2007, 2008, when there was a battle between Toshiba and Sony on HD DVDs and Blu-rays, right? So that sorted itself out commercially. But at the same time, the market was ready for the new media because they understood that that's going to be a vehicle for introducing quite a few new players in the field and an addressable market that they might have not thought of before. And using that kind of an analogy, right, that is now a Blu-ray standard that comes out. What is the standard that drives the innovation for Blu-ray? What is the standard that drives innovations for other comparable media segments as well? You know, Bluetooth, people don't really see this, but there is a Bluetooth standard. There's a standards organization that's charged with the upkeep of what all needs to happen when you use the Bluetooth logo. So that's what GSA has been, or IGSA now has been taking a look at. And that's where the opportunity really comes in. So yeah, new markets like, you know, Japan, when they come in with their new standards, they've gone and done some public comments and things like that. There's other emerging markets that are also looking at regulations and looking at areas where new technologies might come up. But I think looking at what the standards would also drive the innovation, I think that's the appeal in the next 25 years, using some of our successes and wins over the past 25 years as well. And I'll pass it to Mr. Chairman here too to see what his thoughts are on that.
So my point here is, first of all, we've got some incredible members that are every single day out there innovating. But anybody that's been in this gaming industry for the 400 or 500 years that Nimish and I have been in the industry, it's a hermetic environment. In other words, when I was in the Microsoft ecosystem, I'd be talking to a healthcare company in the morning, I'd be talking to a lean manufacturer in the afternoon, and you'd probably be at a cocktail in the evening with an aerospace company. Whereas when you're in the gaming industry, it's kind of like that Irish setter that's going around and around and around and around. So we're pretty hermetic. So my vision is very clear. For our gaming industry to make it to the next crucial step, I'm for a shout out. Our founding platinum member is on this call. We're so grateful to have Aristocrat as the foundation of IGSA. And I think the aristocrats with an S, because the other members, the aristocrats of this industry now need to enjoy a totally different ecosystem. And what I invest my time on is, I just had Deloitte here in the office not too long ago, Amazon Web Services hanging around IGSA right now. I had a meeting, have a meeting at lunch with Microsoft. The next step for IGSA is to become the welcoming entity of our industry, to bring in the mainstream innovators, the Ciscos, the IBMs, all of those organizations. I want to talk to IEEE about their AI standard. I know Nimish has raised this flag a couple of times, that it's time for us to start marrying ourselves to other industry groups and to make sure we're harmonizing cross industries. So where you see me doing business development for the organization right now is trying to get Deloitte at the table, trying to get Amazon at the table. Why? Our members deserve to ask questions to other industries that are 5, 10, and 15 years ahead of us. And Nimish and I are focused there right now. So it's like a three-pronged approach. Number one, we have a heavy lift this year in education. So you're going to see education as being a foundational point for the next 3 years. What is AI? What is quantitative player health? What are these topics so that when you get one of our members like Light and Wonder, and they're doing a brainstorming session on what they're going to do for player health, well, they're actually feeding off our education, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. The second thing is we have to welcome in other industries to come in and educate and inspire our members. And the third thing is the regulators need IGSA more than ever. So the amount of time I am investing in with the regulators this year is the highest of my entire career. That's what we have to do to make sure that we attempt to catch up to the evolution curve that the gaming industry is largely behind right now.
Well, I love that idea of like the welcoming committee, right? And if anyone from if any indication of the rest of the members are what the people I've met so far from IGSA, I'm sure that we could not have picked a better welcoming committee for our industry than yourselves. I want to, and you guys have been so gracious. Thank you guys so much for your time today. I'm going to get you out of here on this. I'm sure you guys have multiple things left to do today. But if we are to set, let's say we have this conversation again exactly a year from now, and we're right back here. What is one goal? I'll open it to each of you. So what is one goal that you would like to have achieved for IGSA by the time we sit here next year? And I'll open it to either.
Well, it's simple for me. I feel the burden of the entire organization. I say that because of the seat I sit in right now. My dream, my wish, is to have a first draft of an ethical AI standard that is adopted by the members and that you're getting the industry to sign on to a manifesto to. I want a first payment standard strategy out there, so that everybody is looking at a clear way to deal with our industry. Our industry is struggling with online payments. We need to get ahead to get to that one. And for the life of me, we need a one-pager on a player's health standard so that everybody starts to throw away what's not necessary anymore and cut right to the meat and the bones, so that we're focused on our operators who need to make more money to be competitive and to make our industry more safer, so that regulators get all of the society pressure off them. So I'm looking at a first draft of those three have to be out in the market, so that we're building next year in 2024. At the same time, I really hope to see two or three new members coming from outside of our industry, if that makes sense. Nimish, I hope we're somewhere in the same ball field.
Oh, yeah. I pretty much echo everything Earl said, right? I'll take it at a philosophical level, because Earl was so gracious with his remarks there. The philosophy is, I want to, when we get together this time next year, is did we continue capitalizing on the excitement that we had started this year? Right. That to me is a very philosophical assessment of where we need to be in a year from now. And if the excitement can be, kind of snowballed into where it needs to be a year from now, we will achieve everything that Earl's talking about under his vision as well. And together, once we partner on that too, these are things that'll then come feed back into companies like mine as well, where ESG, as an example, is a very fundamental tenet of our company from an Aristocrat standpoint. So we're looking at that excitement getting out there too, but in terms of like the intake process as well, it's going to benefit a lot with the standardization that's come about. And ethical AI, just because Earl and I are closely partnered on that committee as well, I think that'll be the vehicle also, to use that terminology again, as the kind of a outbound vehicle for excitement into the industry as well. Like, hey, look at what we all achieved together, because this is something that everyone struggled with. And here we are a year later, we actually have some prescriptive standards that regulators and operators, if they need to, can adopt and use that as a baseline to take it to the next step.
Definitely, definitely. Well, I must say, on behalf of GGB, between the first episode and this episode with Mark, Peter, you, and Earl, it's just been really great. I've had a blast learning more about the organization and where it's headed. I can't wait to see, I'll be following closely, definitely, both your guys' your personal lives as well as with IGSA. So thank you again so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
Same here. Thank you, Jeff. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We hope you enjoyed this week's episode, sponsored by Pavilion Payments. To learn more about Pavilion's full suite of gaming payment solutions, visit pavilionpayments.com. To learn more about Jeff and his journey with Slot Cycle, visit ggbmagazine.com. Subscribe to GGB News to get all the news of the gaming industry delivered right to your desktop every Monday morning, and be sure to use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss an episode of the GGB podcast by subscribing on Amazon, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify today. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.